Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, it's the Don Show. It never ends.
Those are facts.
The Don Show, starring only Don.
Good for me.
It's the Don Show, starting now.
Tweet that.
Hey Don.
7 o'clock in the big city. It's the Don Show till 7:30, and then Rangers pregame as we get ready for game two. Rangers and the Hurricanes from Raleigh. 1-800-919-3776. Load up the phone calls, anything you want to talk about, but a chance to talk some Rangers here with you before we embark on the pregame show. And I want to dispel one myth that I think exists in hockey and sports in general, and that is this whole quote-unquote momentum. Losses that are crippling, that you just can't overcome. You know, I heard that after game one against Pittsburgh. Oh, you lost a 3-overtime game at home. You coughed up home ice advantage. How can you possibly recover? Well, they recovered nicely in game two and won that game going away 5-2. Then it showed you what kind of momentum the 5-2 win had because they turned around and lost the next two games and trailed in the series 3-1. And after two crippling losses in which they gave up a combined 14 goals, you would think Pittsburgh would have all the momentum. But guess what? Rangers win games 5, 6, and 7 and take the series. Listen, it's a narrative if the Rangers lose, right? Well, of course they lost game 2. How could you possibly come back from the way they lost game 1? Believe me, the players don't think about it that way. It's another game. It's another situation. It's another day. It's another vibe. It's another feel. And there was enough good from that Ranger loss where you could say, you know what? If they do the exact same thing in game two, they could win. I know they lost despite playing what Gerard Gallant said was their best game of the postseason, and certainly their best first period, if not best first two periods of any game in the postseason. But it still took, you know, a late goal by Aho, who is a singular talent, best offensive player on the Hurricanes. And it took a fluke goal by Ian Cole that bounces off of Lindgren into the net in overtime. So I like their chances if they play the exact same game tonight. No baseball tonight. Mets rained out or actually snowed out in Colorado, so they got a doubleheader tomorrow. And that is going to be Carrasco and Williams making the starts there because the Mets are in trouble, right? They lost DeGrom for the foreseeable future. Scherzer is going to be out for the next possibly 2 months. McGill's out as well. So the Rangers, the Mets are trying to piece it together and all these doubleheaders. They just had a doubleheader that they had to play on Wednesday. Now they got another doubleheader tomorrow. They've played the most doubleheaders, I believe, in baseball so far after playing so many doubleheaders last year, if you remember. It's taxing on a rotation and a bullpen that right now can't afford to be taxed. You've lost 3/5 of your rotation now, and it's going to take now pulling guys, you know, Peterson getting called up and now having used Williams out of the bullpen. It's going to hurt the bullpen, which is easily the weakest part of this team, so they're certainly going to get tested. And take a look at that schedule in June. It's daunting. Yankees, they're going to have to play 2 on Sunday. In case you missed it, that game was rained out. So a doubleheader beginning at 3 on Sunday against the White Sox. And one thing I'll say, I'm not going to complain or I'm not going to say the Yankees have the best record in baseball because of who they played, because they've played some good teams. I mean, the White Sox are supposed to be good. The Blue Jays, everybody and their mother had winning the American League East. But they've played the same teams a lot of games with the Blue Jays, the White Sox, the Orioles. It's probably a little crazy to just play the same teams all the time. You'd like to change it up a little bit. But the Yankees have the White Sox this weekend. So lots to discuss at 1-800-919-3776. Let's take your phone calls and let's start it off with Simon in New Haven. You're on the Don Show on ESPN New York. What's up, Simon?
How you doing? Great show as always.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to make some comments about the Yankees thing, the Yankee situation. Well, sure. I know there's talk they may want to get Soto for the Nationals. Instead of giving up people from the farm system, why don't we just make a trade with the Nationals? Give them Hicks and Gallo for Soto.
Well, why in God's green earth would Washington want to do that? Seriously. Why would they want your two players that aren't having great seasons? And Hicks, by the way, still got a lot of years left on a contract in which he's never been able to live up to. Gallo is a career 205 hitter. Why would they give up a player that they still have control over for the next 3 years for two players that right now aren't playing Major League Baseball? Simon, thank you for the phone call. I'm sorry. I don't even want to hear your response because it makes no sense. People, please, if you don't like them and it's obvious they're not having great years, why would the Washington Nationals, who could put this guy up for bid and take major prospects from around Major League Baseball, bid, even if there's like maybe five, six teams that could afford to pay Soto when his contract is up, why bypass getting some of the best prospects in baseball, best young players in baseball, maybe to return, and you're going to give up Gallo and Hicks? I'm sorry. I mean, either that was a crank call or you just don't get it. Greg Rockland, you're on ESPN New York. What's up, Greg?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Big fan.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. So, first, I just side note, I would love to see the haul that Soto would get. I think that would be so tough to speculate. But reason for my call, big Ranger fan. I've been lucky enough to be at all the home games so far this year.
Cool.
I think tonight and this series really going to come down to third line versus third line. I don't know if you know the status of Lindgren. I know he's been in and out and he hasn't been 100%, but if he is anything less than 75%, I think Aho is going to have a field day out there. I think the kid line's been our best line, and even though we had a good first two periods against Carolina, I still don't think we had that much sustained just pressure like Carolina had in the third period. So I don't know. I think it's really going to come down to the kid line versus the stall line. And
they're going to have to figure that out, because that stall line can really shut it down. And you know, moving Natchez up like they did to play with Trocheck and Svechnikov has really supplied a lot of offense there for them. And having Domi, who single-handedly won Game 7 against Boston in the first round, moving down to the fourth line. Hey, Greg, this is a really good Carolina team. You saw it in the regular season against the Rangers. You saw it in the third period. But guys are going to have to step it up. You're either going to have to break up the kid line, or you're going to have to give the kid line more minutes, right? You're going to have to try to free them up to get them to play some major minutes, or you're going to have to find a way to put Lafreniere on that top line. But that's a tough thing to do, Greg, because then that means Lafreniere is going to play right wing when he should be playing left. You can't move Kreider to right because he's more a traditional left winger. It's a really tough spot to free them up. You're just going to have to try to give them more minutes, Greg. It's odd to say, but they were so good in Game 1, you're probably going to have to see a little bit more of them in Game 2 if you're going to find some offense.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of the biggest things that hasn't been discussed, I think, enough is just Carolina. They're top D pair. I know they're plus a million, but I think everybody else, I think what was the stat, minus six? I don't know, for the playoffs so far or so on and so forth. So if our, you know, second line or Panarin line, you know, can't get it going, I think that's going to be the deal breaker.
Yeah, they're going to have, when the Rangers are at their best, Greg, and thank you for the phone calls, when they got Strom, Kopp, and Panarin clicking. You know, even though I was disappointed in the number of opportunities the top line got, you know, they still, Kreider, Zibanejad, and Vetrano are going to get theirs. But what really makes it special is when those top six are going, and then you can throw in the kid line as a third line, well, then this is a really an offensive beast. But as good as Antti Raanta was in Game 1, and he was phenomenal, made some amazing saves, 28 shots on goal, you're going to have to do a little bit better than that. And one goal in 60 minutes, you're going to have to do better than that. Really, how often, even in low-scoring playoff games, do you think you're going to get out of Dodge on the road against a really good Carolina team winning the game 1-0? So the offense certainly has to step up. John in Islip, you're on ESPN New York. What's up, John?
Love being a part of the Don Show.
Thanks, man.
Mika, can he win a big faceoff? I mean, like, the problems in the faceoff circle are really coming to root here. But also, though, I want to say, there was a big difference between them getting through the neutral zone and then Game 1 versus the Penguins, which I kind of like, right? They're carrying it through, set up in the zone. I like them tonight. I got, like, the chances. I think 3-2.
I feel good about them as well, John, because I just cannot discount the effort and just throw it away because they lost the game 2-1. They played a phenomenal first two periods, and they weathered the storm the first 5-6 minutes of the third. You know, Mika said it afterward. They were great for 50 minutes, and then, you know, Kako misses the open net. Maybe they laid back a little bit trying to kind of, you know, milk the clock and get out of Dodge, and I think they learned their lesson. You know, Shesterkin's going to be great. I think Miller had a phenomenal game. I think Lindgren's okay. He came back from the injury in the first period. I don't think he's 100%, but I think he'll be able to play. I'm with you, John, and thank you for the phone call. I'm bullish on them tonight. I am. They're not going to get swept. And, again, I wouldn't even say it's over if they lose because they still haven't played a home game yet.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, you know what it means. It can't be the Don Show without Richard in Manhattan. What's up, Richard?
Hi, Don. Hi, Peter. You know, Don, you mentioned Bob Cousy and Roger Angel. And it's kind of ironic. Roger Angel had to be the greatest sports writer still living, and certainly at that age, 101. Mm-hmm. Cousy has to be the greatest American athlete at that age still living. He's got to be the oldest, greatest athlete still living, 93 years old.
Is Willie Mays older?
No, Willie Mays is 90 at most.
Okay.
Willie Mays is a little younger.
So Cousy's 93.
93. There's nobody greater than him.
Russell hasn't made it to 90 yet.
Don, I don't think in golf and bowling and boxing, certainly not. Track and field and any of the major sports, any sport, I don't think anybody greater than Cousy at that. Anyway, my Cousy story is this. He did something in the magical 69-70 season, that Knicks season. Well, in the beginning of the season, they had like a 17-18 game winning streak. That's when you knew the Knicks were going to be something special. And they were playing the Cincinnati Royals. It was on Channel 9. Bob Wolf was doing the game. This was late November of 69.
Okay.
Cousy was the coach of the Cincinnati Royals. Oscar Robertson was still on that team. Now, they were up by 10 points with a minute and a half to go in the game, and they couldn't inbound the ball. They couldn't get past Barnett, and Frazier kept stealing the ball. DeBuscher kept stealing the ball from Robertson and a couple of kids. Van Arsdale, I think, was on that team. Anyway, so what Cousy did was he inserted himself in the game 6 years after he had retired. I think it was 40 years old. He retired after the 63 season. So he hadn't played NBA basketball in 6 seasons, but I guess he still has his designation that he was a player coach. He came into the game. He was terrible. He couldn't get the ball up court. The Knicks won the game. And I think they lost the next night, the Knicks, and broke their 18 or 19 game winning streak. But that was a famous game. It was on a Friday night. Bob Wolf did the game, and it was, and Robertson never talked to Cousy until the end of the year. He was traded. Oscar was traded at the end of that season, the 70 season. He went to the Bucks, of course, with Jabbar in 70-71. They won the championship. But that was a famous Cousy story. He was a great ball. I remember him very, very in the tail end of his career. 60, he ran the ball up all the time. The Boston fast break, Don, was like the Montreal Canadiens on a power play. Tic-tac-toe, and Boston Celtics, when they ran their fast break, forget about it. It was something that no one had ever seen in basketball. And Cousy, of course, was the ringleader. They were so coordinated. It was such an offensive weapon. But he was some ball player, Cousy. He was the first ball player to run the ball up. Don, Peter, thank you, guys. Always.
Oh, thank you so much for the phone call, Richard. Yeah, Willie Mays is 91, so I guess that would probably be the closest of the four major sports. I'll try to think of anybody else before we go to the pregame at 7:30. But, yeah, interesting stuff with Cousy. And just, listen, J.J. Redick, in case you missed it, talked about, you know, Cousy played against plumbers. And Cousy was on with Russo, took exception to that, and mentioning that some of the plumbers that he played against, some of the greatest ever in the history of basketball, like Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell. So Cousy definitely got his shots back. So good job out of him.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to Brad in Manhattan. You're on ESPN New York.
Hey,
what's going on, Brad?
Hey, how are you guys, man? Thanks so much for taking the call. I wanted to talk about like the Rangers and how they haven't been able to put out a solid 60 minutes, and basically how game one, you know, the Hurricanes were able to muster up, you know, some presence of mind in the locker room. They got a good coach, Brendan Moore. You know, basically, I want to see who you guys think is going to be the guy in the Rangers that are going to be able to champ him up and get him to come out and actually put out a solid 60 minutes tonight.
Well, I mean, you talk about 60 minutes, and I'm with you. That's something that they've really struggled with really all year. It seemed like even in games that they won, there'd always be that 5-6 minute lull. Remember the Seattle game early in the season? They let them back in. They had bad third periods in Edmonton and Vancouver on that very same trip. But I take exception to the 60-minute effort in Game 1, Brad, and thank you for the phone call, because if Kako puts the puck in that empty net with about 6.5 minutes to go, if everything goes the same way, including the Aho goal late, would you say they didn't play 60 minutes? I mean, you got to give Carolina credit. You knew they were going to come out in their own building in the third period and come with a major push down 1-0, and the Rangers sustained it. So I really can't say they played poorly at all. It's just, hey, Carolina's going to get theirs. I mean, they played mano a mano, one of the best teams in the NHL, on the road for 60 minutes, and they lost on a fluke goal in overtime. So now, as far as the guys that have to come out, I mean, the Kreiders, the Zibanejads, the Panarins, the Stroms, I mean, these are the guys that carried them all year. They're going to have to come up big. I mean, I love the fact that the kid line was so good, but isn't it a little disturbing they were the best line? When you've got Zibanejad, Kreider, and Vetrano, you've got Strom, Kopp, and Panarin. You know, they're your top two lines for a reason, and you need more from them for sure. Let's go to Taylor out on Long Island. You're on ESPN New York.
Hey, Don. How you doing?
What's
Thanks
up, man?
For taking a call. Big fan. I'm calling. I want to see what you think about Tony DeAngelo. Did the Rangers make a mistake in letting him go, seeing how good of a defenseman he's been for the Canes, both 5-on-5 and running the power play for them?
Listen, he's a terrific, terrific player, and I think they knew exactly what they were giving up on. But here's the thing, and everybody can talk about the Trump and the right wing politics and all that. You can't go and get into a fight with your goaltender. He's lost it even in these playoffs. What was it, Game 6? He threw his stick, got into it with Marchand. He's a bit of a hothead. Now, when he can contain himself, he's one of the better defensemen in the league. But whether it's chirping the officials, getting into fights with teammates, you know, losing it on the ice, I can understand where the Rangers were like, listen, I don't think we can tolerate this anymore. So I know there's this whole theory of that his politics got him out of New York. No, I think his hot-headedness got him out of New York. And that altercation with Georgiev was just inexcusable. Let's go to John in Washington, New Jersey. You're on ESPN New York. How are you, John?
Hi, Don. I just calling years ago. I heard you on the radio, and I only knew there was a stick, a puck, and a net. And it was so exciting. I said, well, I didn't know anything about this sport. Now it's my favorite sport.
Really?
And it really has a lot to do with you. When you do a game, it's fantastic. I just enjoy it tremendously. And I'm a big Ranger fan, more than basketball or my other sports that I used to love.
Well, John, that's awful nice of you to say. So do you like their chances tonight?
I'm hoping and I'm praying. I already have a radio, but and 10:50 when I put that on, I can't hardly hear it, but I still stay glued to it if you're on, because you do a great, great job. I really appreciate it.
Well, John, that means a lot to me, and you don't have to worry about 10:50 for the rest of the playoff run. All the games are going to be on 98.7, but thank you, John, for the phone call, and good luck to your Rangers the rest of the way. But that makes you feel good that that you became a Ranger fan or became a hockey fan because of me. That's pretty cool. Let's go to Alex in Connecticut. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Alex?
Hey, Don, how are you?
Good, man. You?
Good, good. I just want to see if you noticed the other night, after Cole scored the winning goal, they were interviewing him, you know, in the post game before they went to the Flames game. And there was a fan right behind Cole in a Hartford Whalers jersey. And I was like, wow, look at this. Somebody knows the history. In North Carolina.
You know, that's their third jersey. That's why. I wouldn't give them that much credit, Alex, because their third jersey, their throwback jersey, is a Hartford Whaler one. But maybe there was a fan that just remembers the history that they used to play in Hartford, but that also could have just been a fan that wanted to get their retro jersey because they do wear them on occasion during the year.
Very nice. And then I just wanted to ask if you think the Flames and Oilers is the biggest rivalry in sports because people don't know about it because it's hockey.
Well, you know what? It's tough, Alex, and thanks for the call to say it's the best rivalry in sports considering this is the first time they've played in the postseason since 1991. But if you know the history and you know hockey, it's up there. It certainly is. And some of the wars that they got into in the 80s when the Oilers were the Oilers and the Flames were trying to, you know, make their stand, and they went to the final in 86 and won the cup in 89. And then, I've said it many times before, I thought that 89 Flames team was one of the best teams I ever saw. When you look at Mike Vernon between the pipes and, you know, players like Al McGinnis on the blue line. They had so many, you know, Theo Fleury, a young Theo Fleury, a young Joe Nieuwendyk, you know, Joel Otto, Lanny McDonald. They had some great, great players on that Calgary team. Only won the one cup, but they did go to the final in 86. I think one of the only teams ever to win a cup on Montreal Canadian ice, lift the cup up in the old Montreal Forum. But those some great wars they'd have in the old Smythe division when Vancouver and Winnipeg couldn't get a sniff because Calgary and Edmonton were always beating each other up. But that is going to be a fun series. Game one was 9-6. I don't think you're going to see that many goals tonight. Matter of fact, I've suggested on my podcast, Game Misconduct, which you can get on the ESPN 98.7 app, by the way. I would not be surprised if that's an under tonight in Game 2. Let's go to Mosey in New Jersey to close it out. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Don, it's Mossy.
Mossy, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I'm a huge fan. Listen to you with the Michael K. Show all the time. I think the Rangers played great, to be honest. I think being on the road against a tough team coming off of Game 7, I think they had an amazing game. Like you said, a fluke goal, and that's what cost them the game. But I think they played full 60 minutes. You are expecting for them as a home ice to come on the third quarter. You hit it right on the head. That they were going to make a push, and they kind of withstood it. So I feel our chances are great tonight. I think they're going to take it tonight, tie the series 1-1, and go home with the home field advantage. I think that's really going to happen tonight. And
I'm
I don't know if you remember.
I had too. We're up against it, so we're going to have to let you go. I'm feeling good about it, too, Massey. They played one of their best games, and they lost in overtime. If they had lost the game 5-1 playing their best game, I'd give them no hope. But I like their chances tonight, and I think they'll even it up, and they'll go home with a 1-1 series, and it becomes a best of five, and they would have home ice advantage.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.